almost 70 years, you know, over 70 years, is a serious concern. This is all interlinked with this idea and taking away Kashmir's autonomous status and try to force, you know, settlers into, again, following an Israeli model. So this is not surprising. These are tactics that we're going to see increasing. And I'm really concerned with the current prime minister, who basically has identified that Islamic terrorism, quote unquote, is the most significant threat in the United Kingdom. So and this is something he said a few months ago. That's something that, you know, I would like to see how it's going to play out, what he means by that. It's a lot of ambiguous words. And I'm really concerned with the United Kingdom right now because there's an economic crisis that's on. At the same time, we have the crisis in Ukraine. So there's a lot of pressure that's on there that gives a rise to this nationalism and hatred. And Islamophobia is going to only increase in these type of environments. And Hindutva is only going to add fuel to it.
On that note, I would like to thank Mr. Sayyid Moaz Shah for being on the program. He's the director of Center for Human Rights at Ziauddin University. Now, let's see how people have reacted on social media.
Robert Card, journalist and researcher, tweeted, "Stop the India genocide. Indian Muslims rally in London to condemn Hindu fascist Modi government and Hindutva terror against India's minorities." Sayyid Haydar Rizvi, social media influencer, said, "Global Islamophobia hate comes from only three places, India, USA, UK, where India has become a major source of anti-Muslim hate crimes. Western culture, which is based on white supremacy and imperialism in the name of modernism, and Hindutva culture, which is based on racism, casteism." Raja Faisal, journalist, posted, "Activists of Khalisa movement in USA protest against rising Islamophobia in India, standing shoulder to shoulder with our Muslim brethren against Hindutva tyranny of India," they say.
And that was our episode about the RSS political ideology sweeping across the West, sowing seeds of hate crimes and religious polarization. We shall meet again next week. So till then, take great care.
Food for thought.
Hello everyone, and here is part of a moving supplication to the Almighty by Imam Hassan Askari, peace be upon him, the 11th infallible heir of Prophet Muhammad, blessings of God upon him and his progeny. O you, the aware of hidden consciences, you are merciful to everything and aware of everything. Forgive those who repent and follow your path. Protect them from the torment of fire. Give them soon your victory that you have promised them, and you do not fail the promise.
Iranian Radio, Global Mission. This is IRIB English Radio.
IRIB English Radio presents Viewpoints.
Viewpoints.
With the presence of different scholars.
The presence of different scholars. IRIB English Radio.
بسم الله الرحمن الرحيم السلام عليكم ورحمة الله وبركاته Dear listeners, brothers and sisters from all around the world You are listening my voice from IRIB English Radio And today I have the honor to be the host of today's episode I am Vita at your service And with me I have two dear guests Brother Ali, hello, how are you doing?
Assalamu alaikum, thank you
Assalamu alaikum
and for inviting me, it's a pleasure to be here
It's a pleasure for me too And brother Amit here
Thank you very much. Assalamu alaikum wa rahmatullahi
wa barakatuh. Assalamu alaikum wa rahmatullahi wa barakatuh. So, we're going to go through our topic today. As you know, all the women around the world are somehow different and making hijab or something like that. But one of the most important signs of Islamic women and Muslims who are women is hijab. And we are known around the world by our hijab and the way we are appear in the society, actually. So, in the last episode, we talked about the obligatory hijab and why this obligation is something that we have to accept in our society. The thing is, I'm going to just elaborate it more to you and ask you, my dear brother, Amit, I want you to answer my question that is there any flexibility in the degree of your covering yourself? I mean, for example, if you go to London, if you go to New York, if you to go somewhere that there are some dressing codes that are somehow you know opener than what you have in your own country in your own Islamic country, can you follow their rules? And at the same time have your own beliefs. And have your own Islamic beliefs, actually.
You know? Bismillah ar-Rahman ar-Rahim. I think I should refer to a verse that will first destroy me, and then I will fix myself in the way. Allah subhanahu wa ta'ala in the Quran, He says, "La ikraha fid din." There is no compulsion in religion. And this verse has been quoted by many of the opposition just to justify that there is no form of compulsion in religion whatsoever. Mm-hmm. Just to give you a context of this verse was revealed when the Ansar, the companions of the Noble Prophet in Medina, they were forcing their kids to accept Islam. Okay. If we look at the history of Islam, the Prophet, when he migrated to Medina, mm-hmm. Those who came with him were Muhajir, they were migrants, and those who were there helping the Prophet, they were considered Ansar, those the helpers. The Ansar, they were very clean people, but some of their kids, of course, they did not accept Islam in the first instance, so they were forcing. This is when the ayah, La ikraha fid din, revealed. This verse was revealed. They say, look, don't force your kids, don't force anyone to the religion. Following religion, you know, accepting the religion itself. And when I mean religion, I don't mean the religion Islam versus Christianity.
Mm-hmm.
I mean religion Islam by its extensive meaning, taslim ilallah.
Yeah.
Meaning submissive to God Almighty, right? Don't be very aggressive when it comes to, you know, forcing people to accept Islam, right? When the person accepts Islam, right? Now, we're not talking about a specific country, Islamic country, non-Islamic country. We're talking about a Muslim now, right? Mm-hmm. When a person accepts Islam, he accepts it with its entirety. There was a group of people when the Prophet approached them and he told them, accept the religion, and he convinced them. They went and they had their discussion with their elders and they came back. Look, we're going to accept your Islam. We're going to pray. We're going to do whatever you say. But there are three things we're not going to accept. I'm just going to say two things so that we, in the interest of time. The first one, they said, our main job is to, for example, loot the caravans who travel. Right. This is the way we get money. This is the way we earn money.
Mm-hmm.
You were saying that thievery is not allowed in your religion. Exceptional. Make it exceptional for us. So that we are allowed to what? Go and loot the caravans who are traveling, the trade caravans. The second one is forgive the prayer for us. You see, we are Arabs. We are, we see ourselves as esteemed people. You're telling me to bow in front of, you know, something that we cannot see five times a day? No, forgive this from us.
Yeah.
The Prophet said, look, if you're gonna accept Islam to its entirety. If you're living in a country, let me make it into a more, you know, acceptable.
Yeah. Okay.
If you're living in a country, If you're going to live as a citizen of that country, you have to accept all the laws of that country. You can't say, I'm going to accept, for example, the traffic laws. I'm going to accept the laws, for example, of, you know, trade. But I'm not going to accept the laws of, for example, you know, the educational laws there.
Mm-hmm.
You're a citizen of that country. You're obliged to do that. You've, you know, kind of given your hand of allegiance to that country.
Okay, I understand it. So you're telling me that because I accept Islam, it means that I have to accept all the
exactly.
things that exist in this religion. So I'm going to tell you that, for example, there is someone here in an Islamic country that is not Muslim, is Christian, is, I don't know, every other religion. So why should that person make a job too?
Comes to the legislation of that country. You see, a person who is
so don't you tell me there is an obligation to have hijab here?
There is an obligation. There are two.
There is obligation.
There are two perspectives over here. The first perspective is the Islamic perspective. You, as a Muslim,
yeah.
wherever you go, you're in Europe, you're in North America, South America, wherever you go.
Actually, that's another story. When
okay. But when it comes to, for example, the laws of the country, the legislation of the country, you're in Iran. You have to follow the dress code of Iran. Now, whether you be a Muslim or non-Muslim, this country has been. Developed and the legislations of this country have been developed based on specific values. These specific values kind of conclude that the dress code of a man should be like this and a woman should be like this. Now, whatever those values are, right now, that's not your position to discuss. This is when it comes to legislation. When it comes to you as a Muslim, whether you be in Iran or you be in India, you be in China, you have to oblige yourself to the dress code that Islam, you know, prescribes for you. In addition to that, now let me ask you this question.
Mm-hmm.
Why in France, for example,
mm-hmm.
where they call the civilization of freedom or whatnot, why is it that women are obliged to remove their headscarf when they get to the university?
Because, you know, this is, again, this obligation, you know. Actually, I think that our generation, you know, and I think I'm the candidate of the new generation here. Our generation want exactly the thing you are telling me. I mean, a person who is choosing to wear hijab should be the same value, should be of the same you know, rule everything in a society as the person who choose not to wear hijab. You know, not to wear a scarf. So I think there should be a balance here. I mean, I'm not opposing hijab or something at all. I'm just telling you that, okay, if someone, for example, wants to do that, okay, do that. If you don't want to do that, don't do that. There shouldn't be any obligation. Not in that way, not in that way, you know, not, if, for example, in Islamic countries, not, for example, in France at all. I just don't accept none of them. That's it.
Bismillah ar-Rahman ar-Rahim.
Yes, peace and blessings
be upon the Holy Prophet
Islam
Muhammad and his progeny. I think a part of your question was answered in our previous session, but let's, I think, dive more into this discussion.
Mm-hmm.
Again, when you say that there should be a balance between the person who observes hijab and the person who does not like to observe hijab, actually it's as if you say that, okay, I like this law of the society and I dislike the other one. Because, again, we said that in our previous session that it is a social right for the people. For example, for me, for the other, for another person, for another brother or another sister who lives in this society that his or her right should be observed. So this is not rationally accepted to say that, okay, I'm living in this society and the rules of this society says that you have to observe hijab and I don't want to care for that. Look, as I said earlier, some of the acts of worship, or even some, not even the acts of worship, some of the duties of ours are social and have some social denotation and connotation. So this social aspect of it does not let us to actually be indifferent towards that. Referring to your first question that you have been asking, that in case we are going to move to flexibility to when we are migrating or, let's say, moving to another area or, let's say, another country, I have to say that, look, when you have adapted Islam, when you have adopted Islam as a religion,
mm-hmm.
then we talked about it earlier, we cannot be against selective in it. So that's why before we move, before we migrate, there are some rules and regulations for us in Islamic laws. I don't know if you have seen them or not. Islam tells us, check if the society that you are going to migrate observes the way, I mean, lets you to observe your Islamic practices or not.
Yeah.
So before even migrating, That's why even there are a set of rules for those who have migrated from an Islamic land to an non-Islamic one, right?
Mm-hmm.
So Islam tells you, in case they are going to deprive you from your Islamic, let's say, rights, so you are not allowed to go there. You see?
So let me ask you a question here. For example, just consider that I'm a student in Iran, and I want to go abroad to study my lessons and to, I don't know, improve my knowledge for my country, actually. Mm-hmm. And this is my goal. This is my intention and something like that. So I have a good intention here. And, if we're going to that university, for example, that so-called university in another country, mm-hmm. I have to change the way I have to be. I have, not to wear hijab or something like that. Mm-hmm. And here, what should I do? I have a good intention, but to achieve in this intention, I have to change myself.
Look, the rules of God, the laws of God cannot be changed. I mean, that's why then it's your time to sacrifice for the sake of your religion.
But I'm sacrificing the benefit of my country, of the people. I'm going for more knowledge because, for example, my country, the where I live is not enough for me.
Sister,
I want to go for something more.
Yeah, the mind that actually has legislated such a thing definitely will open some other ways for the person to find some way out of it to reach to that goal and destination.
Mm-hmm.
It's not that to say that 100% the thing that I'm going to find is exactly in that center of the world. This is not something.
It's not like
with regard to knowledge, if a person claims such a thing, it means that he has no idea of what knowledge and science is in today's
but
world.
You're telling me that I have to sacrifice this opportunity because I have to be faithful to the guidelines I've accepted here.
Definitely not.
So
moreover, when you look at the world today, very, mm-hmm. very, very few countries are the ones that actually oblige you to, for example, not to observe Islamic rulings, Islamic ways and covering.
Yeah, I know that. Yeah.
I mean, I can't even hardly name, for example, France and one other country.
Yeah.
So, we are not going to talk about exceptions. Let's talk about, prevalent in the world. Right.
You know what? There is an
exception too. Exceptions can be found in any part of the world.
So even considering considering the exceptions, at what cost? Or let me put it in this way: I have a friend who came, a classmate rather, who came from the States, and he left Stanford University at what cost? Because Stanford University, at the time when he was about to be a student over there, there were a movement of racial supremacists, the white supremacists, mm-hmm. who would find any non-white person in the campus and somehow kill that person, right?
Yeah.
At what cost did he not study? He was a neuroscientist. It's a very important career in this day and age. But he left that. Why? Because to safeguard his life. Now, let's take it to another level. You, as a sister or a brother, at what cost are you going towards that knowledge? Yes, in Islam itself, Islamically speaking, the Prophet said, "Utlub al-ilm walaw bis-sin," right? Earn knowledge, seek knowledge, even if it is from China. There is no border for knowledge, but look at the cost that you're giving for that knowledge. Will you, as a person, would still go to study in a place where the rate of rapes for women is higher than usual? Would you still go? It's for improvement, isn't it?
Yeah,
you would still question that place because you're looking at the cost, the what you have to give. So likewise for the hijab, the value that you're giving away while removing the hijab and studying at the same time is not worth it.
No, I got it. Actually, I really appreciate your conversation, and I think I'm convinced somehow. I wish our listeners were enjoying our conversation too. And that was all for the two-day episode. Thank you, dear listeners. This is IRIB English Radio. Farewell. Assalamu alaikum wa rahmatullahi wa barakatuh.
Shining bright, you came to us with a heart so full of love, and you showed that you're the one who cares the most, and to everyone will say, please save me, except Al-Habib. Ummati, Ummati, يقولها لنا يوم القيامة. Ummati, Ummati, يقولها شفاعة أنا لها.
Cultural news, social news, scientific news, artistic news. With delight.
Most of the time, you have to visit an exhibition to see art. But what if art comes to see you instead? Well, a group of artists in Mali have created a floating art venue that will travel up and down the River Niger. It's called the Pirogue du Zem, which is a floating vessel. It's designed to host plays, exhibitions, dance shows, and so much more. The idea is to make art a movable feast that is no longer restricted to fixed venues in cities and accessible to all people. The project was created by a local artist and architect who had a vision to bring art to the masses. The vessel is 20 meters long and 6 meters wide, built with storage and enough space for exhibition. Government officials say the floating venue will showcase Mali's talents and creativity while attracting tourists.
They're back as India has released several of them into the grasslands of Kuna National Park after a 70-year absence in the country. The 8 radio-colored African cheetahs made the long journey from Namibia. The big cats were released during a ceremony by Prime Minister Narendra Modi that coincided with his birthday. After their acclimation in the national park, they will be released into a 5-hectare spread of land in central India, covered by grassland and forest. The felines will share the landscape with other animals and roam with leopards, sloths and striped hyenas. Their reintroduction is the culmination of a 13-year effort to restore the species, which vanished from the country decades ago. Another 12 cheetahs are expected to join the fledgling Indian population next month from South Africa. With more funding, the country hopes to gradually increase the population of cheetahs to around 40.
Many people of the world are supported almost completely by animals because they live in areas unsuitable for animal husbandry. But these days, even some city dwellers are making their living out of animals, like a Virginia girl. Andrea Diaz quit her job at a restaurant and started to rent her pet alpacas to cheer up steer crazy Americans during the pandemic. Since the launch of her business in 2020, it has expanded from 2 to 14 alpacas. Interestingly, 5 with fluffy pets are regularly making a paid appearance at birthdays, weddings, restaurants, and offices. She charges a starting price of $95 per hour. Diaz says the best part is when there are kids' birthday parties, but even it's really a fun for the adults. She calls alpacas a good exposure because they attract people. If you enjoy street art, then you'll probably like Iztapalapa district in Mexico's capital city. Nearly 300 neighborhoods in this area are beautifully painted with brightly colored murals for all to enjoy. Visitors can also ride a cable car and take a tour of the art from above. The district is home to nearly 7,000 murals and graffiti painted on all sorts of surfaces, including rooftops. Iztapalapa Murals is a project that was promoted by the Mexico City's mayor in 2018. The goal of the project was to recover and dignify public spaces through art and involve neighbors in its creation and conservation. Iztapalapa is one of the poorest municipalities in the capital, and the initiative aims to reduce neighborhood violence through public lighting of the murals during the night.
It is never too late to learn a new skill. That's what 100-year-old Nada Rudan has shown with her art when she discovered her love for painting at the age of 87. The Bosnian native says she started to paint to keep herself busy, and now she finds the days are often too short to fit in everything she wanted to do. The artist paints for 3 hours in the morning and 2 hours in the afternoon without glasses. Rudan marked her 100th birthday with an exhibition of all the works that she has painted over the years.
My 100th birthday, I've celebrated it at sea. That was really a big event for me. Before that, I had an exhibition that I didn't hope for. But my children persuaded me. I was against it. I'm not an artist. I said, children, don't embarrass me.
She says she's inspired by nature and her travel around the globe. Rudan has lived in numerous areas such as Central America, Hawaii Islands, Europe, and the Asian Himalayas, among many other places. The artist survived both World War II and the siege of Sarajevo by Bosnian Serb forces. Iran's Kish Island is known as the paradise of the Persian Gulf. Our correspondent Yusuf Jalali has been to the stunning southern Iranian resort island and has filed this report about its beautiful attractions.
It's no land at the heart of a scorching but amazing island. This snow town is one of the latest entertainment centers in Iran's Kish Island in the Persian Gulf. Every year, some 2 million visitors from inside and outside Iran visit the island to enjoy its attractions, from its entertainment centers to its stunning beach.
The beach and the pier in Kish are really peaceful and tranquilizing. It's the third time I'm visiting the island, and I went parasailing, water skiing, and I'm planning to go scuba diving.
Kish Island offers all kinds of sea entertainment activities, from scuba diving to sailing, and oh yes, flyboarding. Besides sea sports, visitors can enjoy its amusement parks and a range of leisure activities inside the island. And if you're a tireless window shopper, Kish is a land of malls and shopping centers.
Kish is an amazing island. It used to be an abandoned island some 3 decades ago, but today it is a luxurious tourist resort with modern buildings and exciting recreational places.
Despite all the pleasure one can have in Kish, the island still has many shortcomings. The major issue annoying visitors is the poor accommodation services.
Hotel facilities and services are a bit weak given the large number of tourists that visit this island. They need to pay more attention to the accommodation infrastructure.
Just a few hundred kilometers away from Kish, there's a tourist magnet in the United Arab Emirates, Dubai, which absorbs the chunk of foreign tourists. While U.S. sanctions on Iran are a major factor to blame for Kish lagging behind in its rivalry with Dubai, the island's officials believe it still has a chance to win the game of tourism against Dubai.
If we want to excel, it is not going to be a tough job. We need to work on 2 major areas. The first is the infrastructure, and the second is regulations that would allow tourists or investors to easily come to Kish to entertain themselves or do business.
Situated off the southern coast of Iran in the Persian Gulf, Kish is one of Iran's free trade zones. Foreign travelers do not need a visa to visit the island, as travel permits are issued on arrival by Kish officials and are valid for up to 14 days.
With its mesmerizing nature and eye-catching urban landscapes, Kish has earned the title of the Bride of the Persian Gulf. Its authorities say the island is already a hub for Iranian travelers, but they say they seek to turn it into a regional tourist magnet. Yusuf Jalali from Kish Island.
The Light is a bulletin in which we bring you a lot of interesting news in different fields like animals' life, cultural events, funny trending news, and more from every corner of the world.
A 78-year-old artist is making a comeback with a unique art installation on Governor's Island in the United States of America. One of its biggest features is the sound and creaking of moving chains.
It's a project that I proposed for a commission in St. Louis. The site of the commission was the area near the Mississippi River and the St. Louis courthouse. So I wanted to do a piece that addressed those areas and the subjects. And of course we have those areas of the Mississippi River, which is a place that you talk about the history of American commerce, but also we can talk about the history of slavery.
Charles Gaines wanted to highlight the role slavery played in building the economy of the United States. That's why he purposely used chains, and the sculptor pointedly faces the Statue of Liberty in New York City. The installation is roughly 30 meters long and activated by colossal chains that rotate on anchors. The installation is part of a three-chapter series called The American Manifest, Moving Chains. It will be kept for all to see until the summer of next year.
A Palestinian farmer has discovered an ancient Byzantine-era mosaic when preparing to plant an olive tree on his plot of land in the Gaza Strip. The farmer and his son have been carefully excavating the area for 3 months since spring. The pair dug out three patches, revealing glimpses of an ornate mosaic with intricate images of birds, flora, and tile patterns. Its full size is roughly 23 square meters. The discovery has set off excitement amongst archaeologists. Experts say it is one of the most well-preserved specimens, with precision in graphics and richness in colors. According to archaeologists, the mosaic pavement dates back to the 5th and 7th centuries. Last month, another Palestinian farmer found the rare stone sculpture while working on his land, which dates back to around 2500 BC.
If you have a sweet tooth, then this next bit of news is just for you. Visitors are now taking advantage of the expanded version of Cake Land, which is an immersive art gallery in the U.S. city of Los Angeles. The structure is meant to feel like a giant multi-layered cake. It's entirely made of artificial materials, but looks like if it's full of cherries, whipped cream, and layers of cake. Artist Scott Hoff says he used nearly a ton of pipe frosting, 120 mirrors, and thousands of cherries. Plus, he embedded thousands of crystals in the walls as a final touch. The artist says he chose to develop Cake Land after he noticed how much his artificial cake sculptures were welcomed by viewers.
So I chose cake because, number one, it's really beautiful. Number two, it's really fun to do. And number three, it engages the viewers in such a meaningful way.
Hoff says he never actually made a real cake before and has mainly followed his enthusiasm for fake food as the inspiration for this project. Visitors are able to walk through the cake, a labyrinth, and explore various rooms. While there is a lot of deliciousness and lightness of the cakes, visitors to this cake land can discover some interesting dark elements as they wander around. The art installation has continued to expand since it was founded by Hov in 2020. Robots are slowly but surely becoming part of everyday life, taking on human roles in different areas. Now, fast food restaurants can make French fries faster and better as a robot called Flippy 2 takes over the job.
When an order comes in through the restaurant system, it automatically spits out the instructions to Flippy. It takes a frozen product, fries it for the precise amount of time, and puts the finished product in the end. It does it faster, more accurately, more reliably, and happier than most humans do it.
Flippy 2 has been created in a robotic lab in California called MISO after 5 years of efforts by its developers. According to the project engineers, a really good understanding of the food science is needed to make sure the food quality is there, how different food sticks together, and how the temperature and heat affect it. The MISO CEO says the machine can cook several meals with different recipes simultaneously, removing the need for catering staff.
This technology utilizes a whole bunch of computer vision. There's cameras throughout the system, including right here we have these food identification cameras. The cameras not only guide the robot and tell it exactly where it is in space and how to move through this area, but also identifies the food type and it knows the recipe for each one.
The MISO CEO says tasks like the fry station are the kind that humans are most happy to offload. The name Flippy comes from the original machine designed to flip burgers, which was not very useful for restaurants.
Our voice comes from the heart of beautiful Iran. Please log on to our website, www.parstoday.com/en.
Today's special.
Assalamu alaikum.
It's special for you. We present to you today.
رضيت بالله ربا وبالإسلام.
الإسلام دينا رضيت بالله ربا وبالإسلام دينا
بسم الله الرحمن الرحيم In the name of Allah, the most compassionate, the most merciful. Dear brothers and sisters, Salamun Alaikum and welcome to this episode of today's special from IRIB English Radio. The topic that we are going to discuss about in this episode is Islam and mental health. Be with us. Today, Monday, is the 5th of Rabiul Thani, 1444 of the Islamic Lunar Hijri calendar, corresponding to the 9th of Aban, 1401 of the Islamic Solar Hijri calendar, and the 31st of October, 2022 of the Christian Gregorian calendar. This is chapter Mubarakah, Ahzab 34.
A'udhu billahi minash shaytanir rajim. واذكرن ما يتلى في بيوتكن من آيات الله والحكمة إن الله كان لطيفا خبيرا
And remember what is recited in your houses of the verses of Allah and wisdom. Indeed, Allah is ever subtle and acquainted with all things.
لا إله إلا الله لا إله إلا الله
Bless your day with contemplation on the verses of the Holy Quran.
Instead of a mean and worthless culture, you must follow the divine culture. The household of Prophet, peace be upon him and his pure progeny, must do righteous deeds prior to others. This fact mentioned in this verse has been stated as the last duty of the wives of the Prophet, and it is a warning unto all of them that they may utilize the best opportunity which has been given to them, that is, being informed of the facts of Islam, and that they might improve themselves under its light. We have been discussed about Islam and mental health. From an Islamic theological perspective, psycho-spiritual health is directly related to a human being's ability to actualize their spiritual purpose. All human beings are created to treat a path that will ultimately ensure their salvation in the afterlife and their ability to acquire God's pleasure. Health is thus, from an Islamic theological perspective, indicated by an individual's successful ability to remain on this path of worship. Hence, any obstacles that obstruct their ability to tread their path is seen as detrimental to human functioning and worthy of attention. This includes psychological, physical, or emotional struggles that get in the way of our ability to worship Allah freely. More specifically, A historic perspective on psychological health must be multidimensional, as it encompasses our overall health and well-being.
Bismillahir Rahmanir Rahim. In the name of Allah, the most compassionate, the most merciful, dear brothers and sisters. Assalamu alaikum wa rahmatullah. This is your host Ali, and we are with you with another topic to discuss with each other about the role of faith and iman in improving the quality of life and mental health. Peace is the hope of every human being. Tranquility or tuma'nina means that a person has stability and peace in his intention and does not give himself an anxiety and worry. In the middle of the waves of worries and anxieties, the Holy Quran introduces hope in God and remembrance of Him as the best soothing and healing medicine for hearts. أَلَا بِذِكْرِ اللَّهِ تَطْمَئِنُّ الْقُلُوبِ. And God has considered it one of the properties of faith and one of His great blessings. Yeah, with his remembrance, actually, tranquility and peace comes to you. Man by nature seeks his own happiness. This is taken for granted, that man by nature seeks his own happiness. If we can count two basic components of happiness, peace or tranquility is the main component that appears in two forms: mental peace, peace of mind, and social security. We have ni'matan majhulatan, as-sihhat wal-aman. There are two blessings of God that are usually ignored by people. They do not usually think about them unless they find the importance and the necessity of them. As-sihhat wal-aman, that is health, which can also include mental and material and body health, and security, social security. In this way, a person is happy at the thought of attaining happiness and at the thought of an ominous future. A tremor falls on his body and he experiences severe anxiety. You see, just with having this in mind that our future is dark, so a sort of anxiety enters our existence.
IRIB English Radio presents today's special, Every Day for 15 Minutes.
Be like the sun shining with light, be like a rose spreading its fragrance in every part.
Today's special.
Be like the earth, humble and wise. Be like the rain, pouring all your love to every soul.
Taking care of our spirituality is one step on the path of mental health. Spirituality is an important aspect of mental health. What we mean by spirituality here is not the mere fulfillment of our religious obligations, such as the five daily prayers. Rather, it is the constant seeking to be the best of one's ability of getting closer to Allah, making our best effort to take care of our relationship with our Creator can go a long way to making us feel better about ourselves and regaining some of the inner peace we have lost. Offer extra prayers, read the Quran or a translation in your native language, listen to the Quran, listen to or watch Islamic lectures, read the book on the life of the Prophet and his Ahlul Bayt, or listen to the audiobook version.
Here is the answer of an important question. How can one understand and navigate sadness and grief in Islam? The Quran reminds us not to allow ourselves to become or remain overly attached to this world and its distractions, and that the pursuit of virtue will lead to ultimate happiness in the hereafter. It is normal to experience sadness and grief even intensely, and just as Allah gave us life, He gave us emotions. These emotions can in fact be beneficial and a means of drawing nearer to Allah if dealt with appropriately. Muslim scholars have offered a number of practical approaches to addressing these emotions. One such strategy is the dua approach, where we can healthily and constructively navigate such feelings.
Guidance from the ayat of the Quran that God has given to us is that we recognize the fact that there are effective strategies for preventing mental disorders. Just as if somebody has health issues, you will go to the health practitioners to find what are effective strategies to control blood pressure, to control your blood sugar level, for example, if you're a diabetes patient. There are effective treatments for mental disorders and ways to alleviate the suffering caused by them. And one of the biggest things is that we have to recognize the fact, alongside two, I'll just mention the first one and then move on, is access to healthcare and social services need to be present in our societies. And our community members, I'm talking about the Muslim community, need to be able to access those services to provide that treatment that they need. And also as a community to recognize that social support is also a key. Not to ostracize people from our community if they are having, going through mental illness issues. We do not ostracize them or look down upon them. You know, unfortunately, there has been a time where even speakers who lecture on the pulpit will critique people and say, oh, you're stressed, you have anxiety, you have this and that, health issues. Mental health illness issues, it's because you don't believe in God. You don't pray enough. You don't fast enough. You don't read enough dua. You don't read enough Quran. It's your fault. And unfortunately, placing the blame on the individual like that does not solve the situation. And so as a community, we need to socially support one another, especially when we're going through these this challenge in this era.
Thank you very much. And that was all for today's special. Inshallah, we'll continue this interesting topic. Till then, take care. Have a nice time. La ilaha illallah, Allahu Rabbi, Muhammad Nabi, Aliyul Imami. La fata illa Ali, Aliyul Imami, Aliyul Imami. علي إمامي لا إله إلا الله الله ربي محمد نبي علي إمامي لا فتى إلا علي علي إمامي علي إمامي علي إمامي.
What you heard was an IRIB English radio program. Our website is www.parstoday.com/en. This is IRIB English Radio. Coming up is the news.